So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the new.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Welcome, everybody, to Wrestling Weekly. Doc Young, Les Thatcher here with you. Les, you were out last week.
I was out last week, and I wish I were out tonight.
But now you are back, sir.
I'm afraid so. I'm afraid so. Our special guest should be David Arquette and Hornswoggle tonight to decide which is the least deserving of winning any kind of title in professional wrestling.
And they're going to have a live debate.
Huh?
And they're going to have a live debate.
Yeah, and they can beat each other. I really don't care.
Actually, J.J. Dillon's going to be on the show tonight. He's our special guest tonight. We haven't spoken with J.J. in a long time. I'm excited to hear from him, Les.
Well, you know what? I'm always excited. And, of course, Jim is going to be in Charlotte the weekend of the 10th, 11th, and 12th, like I am, for the NWA Legends Convention, which is a huge to-do. If you check out NWALegends.com and look at the lineup, I couldn't even begin to memorize all the names that are going to be. I'm going to be there the 10th, the 11th. The 10th will be on Friday from noon till 6 in the South Atlantic Wrestling booth, and on Saturday from noon to 4 in the same booth to greet guests. We'll have 8x10 pictures to offer you, and which I'll be happy to autograph and talk wrestling, and we can talk to Hornswoggle as champion, or
yes,
maybe as the next center for the Boston Celtics. I don't know. That would be possible. Or God. Maybe God is his next move. I'm not real sure.
And he can...
Am I seeming sarcastic here?
Yes.
I hope so. I sincerely hope so. Thank you very much.
So that's actually good, because it's good to see you're back to normal, sir.
Well, I could only... Well, you know what? I guess I would probably be very, very lacking in effectiveness on this show if actually my business was like I thought it should be.
Yeah.
Because then I wouldn't be... It's like... I'm like Fred Sanford. I grab a heart and said, "That's the big one." When I see garbage like that. Did I mention garbage like that? Okay. just wanted to be sure.
You know what the horrible
that
thing?
Along with the main event of champions last night on Raw. I can't believe that I wouldn't have sat and thought for weeks, and finally the light bulb has gone off in my head, and I said, Candice Michelle and John Cena against Umaga, Murdoch, and Cade. Why? It's the match of the ages.
Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Big ratings.
Did I mention stupidity? Okay.
Yeah.
It is. Now, why, you Doc, do you work for the friggin' network or what?
No,
ratings?
I'm being
sarcastic. You explain that to me, I'm sure. Now, we have exactly 1 hour and 57 minutes for you to come up with something that I'm not going to hang up on you before you get halfway through and explain to me why that was a great ratings match.
I'm being sarcastic in my own sense.
Oh, okay.
Thank God.
I thought maybe we need to drug test you along with the rest of the creative people in this industry, apparently. And then, of course, we could go back to TNA from the week before where we spent an hour looking for Kurt Angle's underwear.
Yes.
By the way, I have mine. No one has stolen my underwear tonight, so we won't be putting you through that either.
And I guess it turns out that Kurt didn't lose his underwear after all. He came to the show in those underwear.
See? But that's what you get from being dropped on your head so often.
That's right.
Yeah. And then, of course, when Joe turned on him at the end, none of us had figured that one out.
Actually, that did surprise me.
It what?
It did surprise me, actually.
Yeah, I can't hear you, Doc. there's something wrong with the sound here.
Maybe
I'm
I wasn't,
up now.
Maybe I wasn't paying too much attention, or I was half asleep or whatever, but... No, I
or that and several other things.
I really thought they were going to go face face versus face on this one.
Well, you know what? But how many times? Here's another thing. While we're on that particular show and subject, let's see. 3D beat up the broadcast team, and Angle beat up one of the cameramen.
Right.
Now, that made me think all three of those guys are just pretty damn tough.
And Sharkboy.
Well, yeah, but at least he's a wrestler.
Yes.
At least he's a wrestler. He's not a cameraman or an announcer, okay, or a commentator, whatever your terminology is, which I find no value. Hey, Doc Young beat up three third graders. Man, he's a badass, isn't he? He's really tough. I mean, why? And the other part is it comes back to that same old why do we every week or every other week, how many times has somebody snatched TNA or Don West?
Right.
You don't have the count, do you?
And with the exception of TNA, you don't...
You can't do it on one hand, I can tell you that.
Yeah. With the exception of TNA, you really haven't seen that much lately, but there was a time in
I thought their build-up to the Cruiserweight Circus they did on their pay-per-view, I mean, the X-Division Circus, the build-up, you know, they made it into something seemingly important and so forth because mm-hmm. of the way they give each guy a little sound bite, right?
Yeah.
And so forth. So, I mentioned in my column that I do on Insider that I said that's the kind of thing that if they're going to Fox, the network, not the conglomerate, and if they're going to get the two-hour slot, then they need to, to do more of that and less of the other stuff, you know?
Yeah, that would...
I mean, it's just, they need to be an alternative, I guess is my point. And, right now, if you have the different outlets that where you can buy the Ring of Honor, pay-per-view, without having seen it myself, because I don't, I'll tell you, it's the alternative, you know. So,
yeah.
Well, you know, ask JJ his impression. He's made a couple Ring of Honor shows, at least one or two, and see what he tells you about it. I think he'll tell you it's pretty old school in its simplicity and value, honestly. So I thought the highlight of Great American, the Mediocre American Bash was if you are a wrestler, if you think you're a writer, if you think you're a manipulator or a booker, please, if you have that on tape, watch Dusty's promo over and over and over and over. That's how they're done. And I guarantee you some idiot didn't write that. I guarantee you Virgil went out there and did it off the top of his head with knowing what bullet points to hit.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of the top five promos, not of 07, but of 06 and 05 and 04.
Were you surprised?
No, I mean, why do you old guys keep saying, because we're better? That's why I keep saying it. Because we are. Because, not so much maybe because we have more talent, because we're allowed to be better. You know, we didn't have directors in our ear broadcasting Kevin Kelly, and I've talked about that. If you did a promo, you had a personality, or you didn't do a promo. You know, somebody else did it for you. It was a clever idea.
Yeah, let's got a manager.
Let's have people that only do good promos do promos. Hey, how clever is that?
See, but you can't have managers anymore in wrestling.
And I don't have an Oscar, or I didn't win an Emmy for any writing for any TV show.
Yeah. You need room. You need that money for the divas.
Oh my God, I am hanging up. You're gonna be doing. You're gonna be. You got the next 2 hours on your own, brother.
Which actually brings me up to this: the divas.
Which your slutty little what's her name there on TNA sucking tongue with Lance Hoyt, Chrissy Hemme.
Christy Hemme.
Yes. Yes.
Wonderful
now you take
woman.
Now you take her off the front door of our website.
What?
Trashy little Dixon. out there cheating on Doc. I shiver every time I see
her. She
it.
Is. She is.
And if that costume or her actions are indicative of women's lib, I am God. Okay? I mean, no. But, you know, that, I mean, that's how that gimmick started out, am I right? I mean, how that whole infusion of her with Kip and BG. Am I right?
Yeah.
Wasn't it? So about women's lib?
Yeah. About
or
not beating on the women.
Now it's about Hookers Anonymous. Or not so anonymous, maybe. No, I mean, really. I mean, no, I'm making a point here. Stop and think about it. This is, I mean, if you were casting a movie and that one of the main characters had to be a women's liberal, somebody shooting for the vote for Hillary Clinton. Would they look and act like that?
No, you're correct.
Thank you. That's my point. It's like, does anybody think that's the head of their, well, never mind.
It's bad character development.
It's what?
It's bad character development.
Which is pretty much, which relatively covers the next 2 hours and our industry. Now can I go watch a movie?
Not yet. We've got an hour and 50 minutes still.
Oh.
But then you can.
Huh?
But then after
but then,
that.
Then I'm allowed, okay.
That's, after that,
then
it's a whole
then
week.
I can waller in my own pity. I don't know. We had another death since we were on the air last. You guys were on the air last week.
Yes.
John Cronus.
Yeah, he had actually passed away Wednesday at his girlfriend's apartment in New Hampshire.
I didn't know John. I have heard a little of John. I know he and Perry. I've heard the story that he and Perry actually as good a tag team as they were totally like 180 degree opposites when it came to lifestyle.
Really?
Yeah. Well, Perry was a pretty regimented, ex Marine. And from what I understand, Cronus was kind of happy-go-lucky, like, whatever happens, happens, dude. That sort of thing.
Right.
So, Perry is, is about spit and polish and synchronization. Oh, it's like me. Yeah, okay. But anyway, yeah, and like I say, I didn't know John. But they, it's a lot of, that's funny, too. I've had some people that I would consider pretty sharp about the business currently. Say to me, who's John? I've never seen John Cronus. Well, you'd had to see an early ECW when he and Perry were the Eliminators. And
right.
Truthfully, maybe at that time, we're one of the top three or four tag teams there in the business, period, end of story.
I like the Eliminators. I was a big ECW fan in the early 90s. I would buy tapes from...
I can imagine that, yeah.
I would buy these tapes from, this guy who sold tapes. And
in an alley, right?
Became kind of famous later. I have pretty much.
You were an RFer, were you?
Yes.
Okay.
I pretty
cool.
much.
Well,
have...
It's all right to say so.
Yeah.
No one's going to call you out about it.
I pretty much have all of 94 and 95 on tape somewhere.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Eliminator is a big part of that, and I really did enjoy their matches and all the tag teams at that time. I think they had a strong tag team division at that time as far as regional independent.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's, yeah, so anyway, yeah, John passed away at 38 years old. Man, again, too young.
Yeah, John's family released a statement over the weekend. Said that John had suffered from an enlarged heart and that his whole family had a huge history of heart problems.
Yeah, his sister had mentioned that they had several members of the family die young due to heart ailment, which is hereditary.
It's really too bad. Yeah, and of course, the media got wind of this. Nancy Grace is
all
over the place.
They did, didn't they?
Yes.
And there will be a toxicology report, so which will tell us I don't know what, but we'll see. And if it's got a lot of things involved in it, I'm sure we'll hear about that, too.
Right.
I'm honestly burnt out on the whole roid rage government intervention. Let's all get our 15 minutes of fame on the talk show. Let's boldface lie to save our jobs, and let's say we were someplace when we weren't just to get on because we haven't been around spotlight in years.
Right.
I mean, really, that's what it's turned into, sadly enough. I mean, it really has. And
luckily, they have our good friend Brian Alvarez on that Nancy Grace program lately to even out fact from fiction.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But is there something wrong? Yes. What? I mean, am I articulate enough to put my finger on? No, not really. Or say what I truly, but yeah, there should be, things could be fixed or bettered. I shouldn't say fixed. I don't know that there's a fix. Things could be made better for guys work-wise, health-wise. And whose fault is it? I don't know. I mean, it's a little bit of everything, right? I mean, it's a little bit, you can blame me, you can blame Vince, you can blame the company, you can blame the business, you can blame the fans. And all that is true to a certain degree. I mean, you're competing to do something. You realize you've got to, you're paying a price to do that. You might be risking your health. But if you're willing, and here again, we're not just talking about wrestling, Doc. We're talking about professional sports in general.
Right.
Even who was the golfer that came out and said he knew some golfers that were taking performance-enhancing things.
Now that's a problem when it gets down that far.
Well, but, you know, see, but it comes back to this. It comes back to this. And you've heard me say this here over and over again. To get to that level, you've got to have a tremendous ego and competitive spirit. So, yes. Do they do this? Yes. Do I condone it? Well, no. You know, I should tell you the truth. My stance is this. You're over 21. It's your call. I have never done it. I've seen guys do it that seem to be healthy. I've seen guys do it not be so healthy. I'm not a doctor, but for God's sakes, if you're going to do it, be monitored. You know, fine. And if you can't be monitored, then stay away from it, you know.
Right.
But, I mean, I've never touched the stuff, and I was around when it first started, seeing the gyms, Dianabol, D-Ball, back in the 60s. And, but, you know, again, so, you know, you got to, sure, it's the business, but it's also football and basketball and golf, you know, and cycling and track and field. Do those people get the blame? Well, yeah, because a coach will say to you, Doc, you know, if you got 35 pounds on you, man, you could start linebacker here at the University of Gaga this year, next year, next season, right? Mm-hmm. Now, did they say to you, take anabolic steroids? No. But how are you going to put in 35 pounds? The next 6 months.
Right.
So we all know how you're going to do that.
Yeah.
So we've said it and without saying it, right? I mean, you know, and I'm just being realistic, you know? But yeah, things there, you know, I would love to see things better. I would love to see guy, if he's injured enough that he needs to take time off instead of creating another injury or injuring worse the body part that is already injured, say, hey, man, you know, you need a break. You took one for the team, you know, and when you come back in 3 months, 6 months, 4 months, whatever it happens to be, your spot will be here. You know, we will work you in so that they can go home in comfort and maybe even with a little some sort of income, right? So you can say, well, these guys make $2,000-$3,000 a week or $4,000 a week. Yeah, but you also live a higher lifestyle, and if there's no income, you know, I mean, let's say you just got signed to a nice contract 6 months ago, and you're down now for 3 months. Am I supposed to believe that you saved every penny you made the last 6 months so that you can live comfortably the next three?
No.
No, of course not. You know, so anyway, you know, yeah, so there's a lot of reasons to blame, a lot of things, a lot of people, all my, you know, minutely have to take part of the blame, and those doing the steroids have to take part of the blame too, and yes, the fans do too, I think, as well, because they demand more,
and maybe that's,
and there's only a certain way to give them more.
Yeah. Maybe that's why these tabloid shows, you know, harp on this story so much, is because it really doesn't have.
Well, yeah, it's not clear cut. It's not like you took a gun and went to your local bank, right? At that point, we know that, you know. That you're a robber, you're the bad guy. You know, it's not like we have to sit and determine that.
Right.
You know, and part of it goes to, I think, to the core of why this all started. You know, a guy revered by his peers and you know, admired by the general public. So, you know, a quiet, unassuming guy who worked so hard. It was the blue collar hero for a lot of people, and he ends up killing his wife and his son and himself.
Yeah.
You know. So, I mean, it's not like he died in a car wreck or of an enlarged heart or, you know, anything like that. So, you know, it's just hard to swallow to begin with. And then you start trying to place, well, why did this happen? And, you know, I can't believe it didn't happen over months. I mean, in terms of getting to this point.
Right.
And sadly enough, he was able to hide it. You know, I mean, or to the degree that, you know, it didn't send off warning signals to anybody, you know, close to him.
Right.
So, you know, again, so, you know, it wasn't, I do not believe in roid rage. I shouldn't say I don't believe in it. I don't believe that it had anything to do with this, because that's something that's quick. It's there and gone.
Yeah.
You know, so, no.
There's some other stories coming out about this whole thing that, I guess there were things missing from the house. There were certain things that were missing, like pictures. That had been, like, everybody who had come over to the house, friends and relatives and stuff, these pictures have always been there. And then when, you know, when they found the bodies,
but how
these pictures were gone.
My question to you is going to be, who determined they were or were not there?
Who's going to determine
that? Who determined that? I mean, did we hear this from Nancy's mother or from somebody that, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
No, this is just multiple sources.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? Also, let me, and this is insane. I mean, this is stupid. This is idiotic. This is, gosh, I can't think of a good name, a better name. The Globe. Some goof.
Oh, God.
By the name, no, of the Reverend Johnny Lee Carey, who says he wrestled as Johnny Angel.
Johnny Lee Clary, yes.
Yes, okay. Has written, the minister's shocking charge, devil cult killed Benoit.
Yes.
Armed Satanist. Come on. Somebody needs a drug test. This guy.
Not just armed Satanist. Armed Satanist led by Kevin Sullivan is what he says.
Yes, yes, I know. And you know what? That's when I say this, I mean no disrespect to anybody, but it's so hokey, I wouldn't even book that in 2007. Never mind it actually could actually happen. And for those who think Nancy was a devil worshiper, my God, it was a gimmick. It was work. Wake up. You know, Kevin is an Irish Catholic, for God's sakes.
That says a lot for their acting abilities, though.
Well, yeah. Oh, listen, let me say this. During that period of time, there were legitimate ministers contacting the wrestling office in Tampa, asking them to stop it, you know.
Right.
Because they were buying into it. That's how good the gimmick was. And part because, as you remember Kevin telling us, it was built over months, not minutes or seconds. You know.
Right.
And, you know, but they took time and they built it and it made it work.
Can't and at no time. Like that these days. You can't do that anymore.
Well, but I mean, but this idiot, it's got two pages in here, in this Globe. And when it was called to my attention, I went and looked at it and I'm going to buy this. It's insane. I mean, like I say, Johnny Lee needs to be drug tested. What kind of hallucinogenics is he on? Hello?
It's crazy.
Are you there?
I'm here.
What were you doing, Doc? Diddling?
Playing
with something? I never. And when I say, ladies and gentlemen, those of you listening, when I say he's playing with something, it's not what you may think. It's not with Doc, anyway. It would be a chord or a volume knob or something that is more entertaining than this show.
No, I was in silent agreement with you last
You were in silent agreement with me.
Yes.
You. Okay.
There was another death, and it's not one that's going to be widely known, but there was an independent wrestler from Pittsburgh. Went by the name Devil Budokan.
Yeah, I heard that. And you know, and I heard some guys say, talk like, well, everybody should know this guy. And I'm sorry I don't. I mean, I may have met him without the gimmick. At some point, when we were up there for the Mark Curtis tribute show in '99, I don't know, but I'm not familiar with the guy. You may be, I don't know.
No, I'm not. I've never actually heard of him, but the story goes that he had committed suicide. It was probably a couple of weeks ago, somewhere around the 12th, 13th. They found his body a few days later, but according to his reports, from his friends. He idolized Chris Benoit. He patterned his wrestling style after him. And he was, you know, pretty upset his wife had left him.
Well, you know what? He can join the masses who've done the same thing. I promoted it heavily then. I promote it heavily now. I'm not telling you to be like Chris in the manner, which is obviously totally negative. Mm-hmm. But, yes, any young wrestler can watch his tapes and his work ethic. Absolutely. Copy it to the T. Thank you very much.
We need. I have a friend who's an independent wrestler who is really
just the fact that you have a friend, Doc. I think that's pretty.
Anyway,
never mind what the poor devil's occupation is.
He was pretty upset about this whole Chris Benoit thing, and he actually thought about quitting.
Is that right?
Yeah. He. I mean, Chris Benoit
well,
was his
I'll
hero.
Tell you what. What hit? I've had that thought at one point, and. That was 1972 when Luther Lindsay died in the ring in Charlotte at Park Center. I left. I was leaving the ring. He was going through the ring. We slapped hands. He called everybody Buffy, and so those of us who are close to him could call him Buffy, too, which it's actually a nickname that came from Stu Hart, which is, I believe, is a nickname he had for Helen. But anyway, but Luther was a tremendous storyteller, especially about Hart stories. So anyway, long story short, we passed, he slapped hands. Hey, Buffy, give him hell, Buffy, or something like that. And as I was stepping out of the shower, an usher stuck his head in the door and said, something's wrong with Luther. wrestling Bobby Paul. He was actually went over dead. He dove on Paul, and Paul's knees caught him, and he had just come off of walking pneumonia. His heart was weak, and the way it hit him, his heart exploded.
Oh, man.
And Abe Jacobs and Johnny Weaver, who's Penny Banner's ex, and myself went to the ring, and were standing over him when the medics came, and he said, well, somebody should get his stuff and take it to go up and follow him up to the hospital. And I was getting his stuff together, and John Ringley, who was Jim Crockett's son-in-law, Jim Crockett's senior son-in-law, came in the dressing room and said, Les, you don't have to be in a hurry. He said, the loser's gone. I mean, and I sit here and repeat, verbatim to you today, because he was a close personal friend of mine. He stayed at my home, and I'm proud to say one of the pallbearers at the funeral.
So what led you to changing your mind, staying?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, the thought crossed my mind. Well, I realized that could be me, you know? I mean, when people talk about this business as a work, it's all a show, it's entertainment, it's very demanding entertainment, and it's very demanding physically. And I realized, that possibility is always there. It's just I'd never really thought about it and looked at it that graphically before, you know. And at that point, I'd been in the business almost 12 years. But it shook me, man. It really did. So I can understand you, friend, you know. I was close to Chris and Nancy, and it shook me, you know.
Man, there was one final death this week. We seem to do this every week, but one more. GeorgiaWrestling.com confirmed that Ronnie Gossett passed away.
Yeah, I just happened to see that briefly just a little while ago. I was gone most of the day. I have not been on the Internet.
This was last night.
Yeah, yeah.
He had been diagnosed with colon cancer earlier this year.
Uh-huh.
For those that don't know, Gossett was a manager in USWA.
Yeah,
in the 90s.
He's been around the scene there for years. I mean, even before USWA. But anyway, yeah, you're right. That would be where most people of current listenership would have known him from.
That's where I first saw him too.
Huh?
That's where I first saw him too.
Yeah.
Because I'm a youngin. But yeah, it was just barely out of high school, and here was Ronnie Gossett in USWA. He actually did, and this is a little bit of a trivia, but he made a cameo appearance during one of Jeff Jarrett's earlier Double J vignettes for WWF, the old WWF.
Yep.
But want to send our condolences out to those family. And friends of these three guys. Sad stuff. This just brings down everything. But
yeah.
Let's go to good news.
Okay.
Because the Wrestling Observer is reporting that according to doctors, Conan's kidney replacement surgery last night went excellent.
Oh, good. That's great.
Yes, he is currently recovering at the hospital. He had the operation in Tijuana.
Uh huh.
So that's good news for. Good old Conan.
I've heard of, when I think of Tijuana, kidney surgery is not one of those things that I think
no,
of.
No, it's not.
No.
Cerveza.
But I'm happy for him. That's cool. He's going to live a lot longer, and that's great. I'm tickled with that. But.
I think a lot of this whole thing with Conan and TNA and the whole battle between them really boils down to the fact that TNA didn't want to pay for the surgery.
Yeah.
And Conan felt that he had been there so long, and his condition was complicated by wrestling for them, and they should have kicked in on it.
Yeah. Well, there's something, too. They can say, well, you didn't develop that bad kidney on our watch. You were working for WCW, or you were working for AAA, or whoever you were working for. Well, that's, but you know what? That's the stance of a lot of the insurance companies, right? You're insured until it's actually time to collect, and then you're not insured anymore. they've decided not to validate your claim because of some loophole in that trillion-page contract that you tried to read and couldn't figure out.
Right.
Seriously, So,
always
TNA is not doing anything different than a lot of health insurance companies. But,
right.
You're right. We'll see. To me, that's That's the thing. And somebody said, well, you know, you make all that money, you can save it. That's not even the point.
And plus, you don't make all that money in TNA.
Well, you don't make all that money anyplace. I mean, in terms of exposure versus income,
right.
The boys are grossly underpaid. I mean, you know, again, I'm not fighting for anything here, but that's just a fact. I mean, mm-hmm. they really are. You know,
comparatively to what they bring in, no, they don't. They're underpaid.
Yeah but, absolutely.
PW Insider's reporting that Jerry Lawler was officially served with court papers recently, stating that Sal Corrente was filing assault charges against him. This is a story that goes back, I think, to last month, Les.
That's whatever. Corrente's in, well, never mind what Corrente is.
The weird thing about this whole story is that Lawler made a storyline out of this in Memphis Wrestling.
Well, I know, and it, which is kind of, I think, funny and clever as well, because it will probably cloud the judgment of any jury or judge that might happen to be stuck with hearing this.
Separating fact from fiction is going to be an all-day event.
It's like this. See, you know what? In a situation like that, you and I could have a legitimate beef, and I could strike you, you know, about the head or something, but if we took it to court, due to what I've spent the rest of all my life doing and due to what you and I share together, the question would be in the judge's mind and probably the jury's, will they do this just to get publicity? Because, you know, everything they do in wrestling is a show anyway.
Right.
I mean, when I say that, that's it. And if Jerry's doing anything, he's smartly playing off of that because he's creating more of a illusion that that's what it is.
Right?
He's utilizing it. And so somebody's going to say, well, you know, if that were real, why would he do that?
Right.
Because he's a good manipulator. That's why he would do that.
Well, Lawler's scheduled to report to court on August 1st to answer the charges. We'll see what happens there. This is an interesting note. I just thought I'd throw this in there. But according to Wrestling Observer, the best-selling wrestling DVD in pro wrestling history. Have you heard this?
I'm agog with waiting to hear this.
It's called Grand Masters of Wrestling, which are $1 DVDs sold at Walmart stores. Okay. I have this DVD.
I'm sure you
except
do.
I got ripped off because I paid $2 for it.
Well, see, there you go.
Yes. It has the Iron Sheik in it. And this is this show is from maybe 99, 2000 that's on this DVD. But it has some of the old WWF legends on it, and it's only $1. But as of December 30th, it has sold 426,775 units.
Wow.
235,000 copies sold in 2005, and 191,000 in 2006.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot of money for a $1 DVD.
Yes,
but you should check it out because it's actually a pretty good DVD. The sound,
well,
I mean,
you know,
it looks
I'll,
like
I'll
any.
I'll save my pennies and
it looks like any typical indie show. But it was good to see, you know, some of the guys that you've seen in the 80s, you know, back in action, if you will.
Oh, if you will.
If you will.
Thank you, Dustin.
And I also believe, as somebody who makes DVDs himself, that they piped crowd noise in.
Uh huh.
Yes.
Well, okay.
That's just a little footnote. If you have this DVD and you're watching it, I think a lot of the crowd noise is piped in because you can see a lot of people just sitting on their hands, and then you hear like all these cheers and no one's clapping.
Yes, that's like the announcers that get all jacked up. The building's on his feet, and you see one guy getting up and going to the bathroom. Yeah, they are. Sure, they're up there, man.
A lot of that WCW.
They're flying high. Are you ribbing me? Yeah. They're bad.
Longtime wrestling announcer Bill Mercer is set to release a book called Play by Play, Tales from a Sports Broadcasting Insider.
I know Bill Mercer.
Yes.
Yeah, I sure do.
Maybe we should have him on the show and plug his book soon.
No, when's the book due out?
It's not announced yet, but I believe it's going to be in the fall.
Okay.
But
everybody's coming out with a book.
Everybody has a book.
I've had several people say, when are you going to do a book?
And yeah.
When all my friends and my enemies die, that way nobody will have put a contract out on me and I'll actually tell the truth.
Yeah, the book can finally be true.
And I won't break up anybody's marriages or create any problems for anybody.
I'm just about, like, I don't read all that much, but I do read a little bit every day. And I am just now finishing, again, for maybe the third time, the Terry Funk book.
Uh-huh.
And you can tell that Terry Funk firmly has a hold of his tongue in this book. Because he, like, everything he says is political. Like, politically correct. Like,
that's,
this guy
that's
was a,
funny to think. To think of Terry as being politically correct is scary.
I know. It's like he would say, "This guy, you know, so and so. He's an okay wrestler, but he's such a great guy. He'll do anything for you." And things like that. Like, if he has anything negative to say, it's balanced with something positive.
Yeah.
I just found that, like, if Terry really wrote the book that he wanted to write, it would be a bestseller, I think.
Right. Well, I think a lot, you know, virtually anybody, if they just, you know, actually came out and said, well, you know, I think this guy had his nose up the promoter's rear end.
Right.
And this guy only got a push because of this. And this guy's wife slept with the promoter to get him a push. Or,
right.
I mean, you obviously can't talk about those things
right.
with people who are alive.
Right.
You know, or you could, I guess, but.
So your revenge could be to outlive them all and write the best tell-all in wrestling history.
Yeah.
But as for now, if you want to buy something that's as close as you're going to get right now to Les Thatcher's autobiography, the Professional Wrestler's Workout and Instructional Guide.
Yes.
Yes.
It's at your local bookstore or High Spots.
You can go to our main site, WrestlingWeekly.com. There's a link
where
you can purchase it directly off the site.
Yeah. By
for a cheap price.
Yes.
It's good stuff. I like that book.
You know what? I'm amazed at where that book has shown up.
I know.
In Israel. I mean, seriously. England, I know. I've had emails from people who purchased it there. And I mean, I'm that's one of the amazements of my, you know, to think that when I went into a B. Dalton here in town and I was going to buy a book, I said no. Just wanted to go see ours on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
My name on the dust cover.
Right.
I mean, that was just, you know, I mean, that was not something 47 years ago that I thought, you know, one of the things I want to do in this business before I die would be write a book.
Mm-hmm.
But, and when they asked, I thought first, you know, when the sports publishing asked, I thought it was a rib, honestly. But the guy was just being, you know, funny. And I said, oh, yeah, sure, we're going to do a book. No, no, he said, you know. But you realize, too, if the business hadn't changed the way it's changed, the last 20 years, we would not have been able to write that book.
No.
Without being drummed from the core, as it were.
Ostracized.
Yes.
For telling all the secrets.
I still read on some of the indie boards where Les Thatcher, smart, you know, exposed it. Listen, idiots, get a grip, okay? The business was exposed in 1985. Les Thatcher didn't go on MTV until 1997 or 8 or whenever the hell it was, so. How can I, you know, but it's my fault. But you know what? I also created this. I caused the San Francisco earthquake.
I knew it.
Atomic bomb going off at Hiroshima, which was also my fault. And I'm just a wicked old SOB.
I work in a few local promotions around here. And a lot of times I go backstage, and a lot of these young guys are carrying the book.
Are they really?
Backstage with
them,
cool. Yes.
That's cool. That tickles me to death. Now I just hope they can read.
I've seen this numerous times. I'm sure they can. Just because they're independent doesn't mean they can't.
You got to hope, anyway. Yeah. Well, I know of a school, and I won't name any names, that I'm told that the owner of the school reads, let's try this out of the book. And I don't live an hour from this particular school now.
Wow.
And I've never heard a phone call saying, listen, you know, we use your book. What would you charge to come in and do a one-day seminar or, to
right.
a, you know, or something like that? I'm amazed by that. Anyway, I mean, not, and obviously I'm not looking for the work, or I would be plugging who it was. But, yeah, I'm told that they go to the book.
You're gonna have that. But, yeah, teaching from the book.
Yeah.
And this isn't the first instance of that, is it?
Well, you know what? You have to know for it's. I mean, that's like give me a book, an instructional guide on brain surgery, and I can read from it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to allow me to do surgery on your daughter? I don't think so.
Right.
You know, but Les read the book. You know, it says in the book too. No matter how many times you read this book, this is, you know, unless hours in the ring and taking, you know, thousands of bumps, then you're not qualified. I mean, that's what it takes. I mean, you can know the, you can know that you have to push A in front of B and behind C to get to this point, but unless you can actually do that physically and have the you know, the personality, the characteristics and stuff to get, make it work, then I don't care how many times you read the book.
Right.
They don't work. So.
The guys in the chat room right now are coming up with titles for what would be the name of your book.
He's mad at the world. No, I'm
the,
really not, though.
You know, the main ingredient really says, the main ingredient says it should be called, Are You Ribbing Me?
Okay.
For those that don't know, Les was talking about, he was on MTV before, and I guess some of the chatters don't know what you were on.
We were on True Life. I'm a Pro Wrestler.
Yes.
It was the only 90-minute of that particular series done, and not just because of us. The crazy thing, Helmsley, Triple H, and China were on The Ascent. Tony Atlas, it portrayed him on the downside of the main, and then of Rory Fox, and an idiot from Chicago out of high school were portrayed as the beginners, you know, and they finally showed Rory's first match. And,
yes, but it was a good show.
I thought so. I really, well, you know, it was not, I think one of the, I'm not sure which one of the weekly newsletters, one of the editors said they thought next to Wrestling with Shadows it was the best documentary done on the business at the time.
It was pretty good.
I'm
glad they didn't
cut
it.
Very nice compliment, yeah.
I'm glad they didn't cut it to maybe an hour and a half, an hour or something like that, because I don't think
you
could have got the
whole
story.
Yeah, well, you know, the talk was... that they were going to do that, and that was the producer had told me he had to really fight to get the 90 minutes to start with. And he said, we just can't tell the story in less than 90 minutes. And so they said, okay, but here's the deal. On first runs, or of course, you know, with MTV and a lot of networks like that, they'll run something more than once, so it's not like at, right after the first run, but whatever they determine over a period of weeks as being the first run, I guess.
Right.
Anyway, because things showed hundreds of times, but they said, okay, after first run, you've got to edit it down to an hour. And he agreed to do that, but it drew such good numbers that they never asked him to actually edit it down.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if it ever runs again, it'll run for 90 minutes.
Excellent. MediaPost.com is an article up regarding the CW Network's fall season. Now, that's not unusual in itself, but here's the unusual part. This article features a comment from the president of the networks. Her name is Dawn Ostroff. Regarding Chris Benoit.
Saying they never wrestled on their show.
Saying that he never appeared on SmackDown.
Okay, Chris. Watch your own shows much? No, I really don't, Les.
Absolutely not.
No.
So either that, no, either she really doesn't know that.
Well, she obviously doesn't.
He was the star of SmackDown, or she's lying.
Well, or just out of ignorance of not knowing, you know.
Right.
She might as well be saying, I don't watch all the programming on our station, you know.
But it really is crazy that the president of the network doesn't know what's on the shows.
Well, you know, here's the crazy thing, too. I mean, why is she? Is she paranoid that somebody's going to blame the network?
Probably.
You know, hey, it's CW's fault.
And, hey, I don't blame her. Look who they've blamed so far. Kevin Smith and his band, or Kevin Sullivan, excuse me, and his band of devil worshippers.
Right, okay.
You know, steroids and roid rage and just... all kinds of stupid stuff.
You're right. You're right.
So I don't put it past the media to blame CW for this either.
If you never knew what a media frenzy was in the past, you know now what a media
exactly.
Frenzy
is. Speaking of Benoit, PW Insider's reporting that the SummerSlam anthology DVD that WWE was producing appears to be on hold right now. According to reports, WWE is currently trying to decide how the older footage of Benoit is going to be utilized, if they use it at all, on future DVDs at all.
Right.
So it seems that all DVD production right now in WWE has come to a complete halt, and they're just going to be in a holding pattern right now until they make the decision on what they're going to do.
Huh. My
guess is that they're hoping the story will die down. That's my guess.
Yeah, I guess if you buy a highlights film of Southern California's football team in the years that O.J. Simpson played there, I would imagine he's probably in the highlight films. because he pretty much was those seasons.
Right.
You know? And for a period of time, Benoit pretty much was SmackDown. You know? Of course, no one looks at him technically like those of us in the industry. You know, I mean, people outside the industry hear us talk this way, but, you know, so to me, it's, again, if somebody asked me tomorrow, how should I, you know, how intense should I be? I said, well, watch old Chris Benoit tapes if you can find them. You know, that's how intense you should. You know, I've always said, I always told guys, you know, if you were channel surfing, came across a wrestling show that he was on, and he was just coming down the aisle to go to the ring, forget all the waving his legs in the air and throwing his fist up and jumping around and shaking like he's having seizures.
Right.
Benoit was on his way to kick somebody's ass. Nobody had to tell you that. You could tell it by the way he walked and the way he looked. And that's what I said. You know, you want to copy something? Copy that.
Right.
Because he didn't have to go through all the stupid gyrations and, you know, dancing and setting, you know, and all that stuff to get the job done. And as understated and as average or below average as his interviews may have been, he sold so much with his look and his body and his, you know, body language and facial expression. So, yes, please, by all means, if you're actually planning on being a pro wrestler, that's still something worth watching. You know?
Is it? Here's a question I have for you. I'm trying to figure out how to word this. But
okay, try.
Usually when you're doing a storyline or you're doing a gimmick or something like that, if you start to overact it ruins it. It ruins the perception of reality and stuff. But when it comes to selling in the ring, moves and holds, is there such a thing as overacting it? You understand what
Run this by me again.
Now, you were talking about, you know, the guys who, when they cut their promos, the gyrations,
right.
And they're trying to act crazy.
The gyration things, you know, how Cena comes to the ring, how Jeff Hardy comes to the ring. Well, that's two guys is enough coming to the ring like that,
mm-hmm.
You know. But I see 16 other guys coming out with shaking their left leg in the air, and like I say, like they're having seizures or something.
Right.
Then it just becomes, again, it's not unique to those particular performers. It's just everybody's, you know, your thoughts are, gee, that's just like John, or gee, he's trying to beat John. Or,
so you don't consider
Or he sees why John's making a couple million a year, and he thinks that'll make it for him, too.
You don't consider it overacting, you just consider it
stupid.
Unique.
I always consider it copying, and that's, Ken Griffey Jr. plays the Cincinnati Reds, and he's approaching 600 home runs. Now, if you come down here, you may be a mediocre ball player, and you know, you might look like Ken Griffey, but you aren't, are you?
Mm.
And I don't need to sign you because you look like I have Ken Griffey.
Right?
Okay, I have John Cena, then why do I want somebody that's a bad John Cena copy or a bad Jeff Hardy copy?
Okay.
See?
Mm-hmm.
Because then that's all you are.
Right?
But watch every, I mean, that's one of the amazing things to me is our industry is supposed to be one of creativity, individual creativity. Count how many guys, when they enter the ring, climb the turnbuckles. It's almost mandatory now.
Right.
Everybody climbs the corner and makes their hand. Either gives you the middle finger, you know, or the bull horns or the Hardy, whatever, flip-flop, or Orton does his pose. Cena holds his belt up.
I thumb wrestle with myself.
Okay. Well, there's other things you do with yourself. I've heard too. That's neither here nor there. No, but you get my point.
Yeah.
So what's individualistic about that?
Nothing.
Well, I held up my middle finger instead of my first and fourth
right.
fingers.
I held up three.
Okay. Well, then you're a creative son of a gun. Well,
not creative enough. It's not original.
Well, you know what? If it's original, don't walk up there. Don't climb the corner. And come out there like you're actually, your prime purpose is to kick somebody's butt, because that should be your prime purpose.
Sort of, Bobby Lashley has sort of a gimmick.
Stop and think about something. There are showman athletes in football and basketball and baseball, right? And you know what? they usually are showmen after they've actually done something, not beforehand.
Right.
Right? The Icky Woods, who used to be the running back for the old Cincinnati Bengals and did the Icky Shuffle, he didn't do that before he made a touchdown. He made it, did it after he made it. He didn't do it coming out of the runway because he hadn't done anything. I think it was, gosh, what legendary football coach said, maybe it was Tom Landry, I don't know, or Vince Lombardi, I'm not sure, but somebody of that ilk said to a running, he said, you know, when you go in the end zone, don't do all those gyrations, act like you've been there before.
Right.
Meaning, you know, it's like if you come out, oh, gee, I finally made it on draw. I'm just exuberant about it. Look, watch me jump around and have seizures and all that sort of stuff, you know.
So you shouldn't celebrate until you have something to celebrate.
Well, that would be my call, you know. But then, hey, why don't I know? I don't know.
July 18th, last Wednesday, another Benoit-related
story. Oh, wait a minute. Stop.
Yes.
Hey, Doc.
Yes.
We're going to have a baby. And you're supposed to say, was your wife right? No. But, you know, there's a chance. Because we're
going to
celebrate, right? I my point made. Thank you. Move on.
I'm always looking for reasons to celebrate. last Wednesday, Judge Jack T. Camp officially ordered that prosecutors in the Dr. Phil Aston case are going to have until August 9th to handle the discovery in the criminal case. Just the discovery part is obviously in regards to research needed prior to filling potential additional charges against Aston beyond the current counts that he has against him already. Aston's defense is going to have until August 30th to file any pre-trial motions, and I see this trial going on for a long time.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
Just an update for you guys.
Well, let me give you an update. I won't be following it. I mean, I'll read the highlights of it in the paper or something. I don't lock into things. Like I say, this whole thing is just, it's like, I know there's so much people say, did you see that? No, I didn't. Did you see that? No, I didn't see that either. I have quit watching anything to do with it. I just have, you know, I just, because you can only chew the same hash so many times.
Right.
You know, and it becomes pretty dry and boresome and stale, and I don't think they're going to resolve it, you know, so I don't see any value in continuing to beat it to death. So.
Right. I've watched a few select episodes of Nancy Grace to see how Brian Alvarez would carry himself on the show.
You know, I knew our boy Brian was going to be on there, and I haven't seen it, but I'm sure he carried himself well.
He did good. And maybe a Geraldo, and that was it. Like, everything else, I just ignore it now.
Uh-huh.
So it's gotten to that point. The Observer is reporting this in an interesting story. Backstage before the July 2nd show, Vince McMahon held a meeting in which he basically told everyone to immediately get off whatever they are using, which is presumably, you know, a call to cycle off steroids, growth hormones, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, there's already been some noticeable physique changes following this whole thing.
Okay.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but a lot of the guys look smaller.
They do, huh?
You haven't noticed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually noticed one person in particular who actually wasn't smaller, but was softer. What I mean by that is certain anabolics will give you a hard finish look.
Right.
You know? This particular person wasn't as noticeably defined, cut, you know, ripped, sliced, whatever bodybuilding terminology you want to use, as they have been. And I did notice that, and I thought, yeah, okay, they may be cleaning out, you know, so.
That's good.
It's
maybe a little bit late, but it's good. It's a step in the right direction.
Well, you know, that there's the thing. It's like the ship is sunk, all the paths are dead. Well, now let's, you know, what do we do about it now? Not much.
I think it's a matter of damage control at this point.
Well, yeah, I said the first week, as you recall, the company's doing, I mean, it's like any other large corporation now.
Right.
You know, I don't care if it was General Motors or, you know, GE, you know, Procter & Gamble, whoever, in some situation extremely negative that was nationwide, thrown out in the media at a media spotlight, you're going to do damage control. You have to, right?
Right.
Our government does it all the time.
Or it's going to snowball on you. PW Insider's reporting that Kurt Bauer left WWE's creative team last week. He had been recently working on the SmackDown creative team. I don't know if a lot of people remember, but Kurt Bauer was the owner-promoter of World League Wrestling in Florida.
Yeah.
Which got to be a pretty big independent.
JJ worked for him a time or two. JJ can probably give you a fix on the guy a little bit. I've never met I've corresponded with him through email, but I've never met him. Don't know him.
I didn't even know he was working there until I had read this. Because
well, you
I
know what? I had forgot that he was until I saw that he was leaving
yeah.
or had left. But yeah, when I saw it, I said, yeah, that's right. He's one of the writers.
So based what's known right
the
now.
The only writers in either company are the fat guys that oil themselves up and strip.
Yeah.
And I'd rather not know them. Thank you very much.
Right. When Dusty Roses was moved over to working for the ECW brand, Bauer and Michael Hayes were said to have disagreed a lot creatively. As a result, Bauer made the decision to give his notice. He finished up last week. For those who remember, a similar situation also took place with another writer named Andrew Goldstein, who also had problems working with Michael Hayes. Goldstein was reportedly given a lot of credit internally for helping to turn around the SmackDown brand last year.
Let me break in here and say that I'm not in the least bit surprised that a writer from television or movies is bumping heads with somebody that's creatively firmly set in the wrestling business.
Yeah, you're going to get
because there's no. They're not going to be thinking about the same things. Because they aren't the two things aren't the same, or the
right.
three things. You know, Emmy television writing and Oscar movie writing is not wrestling writing. I'm sorry, it's just not.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be a very creative person in a movie, but when you come to my particular domain, my suggestion is that you, when in Rome, do as the Romans do.
Right.
That's what's made the business successful. I must have said that at least 10 trillion times.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true.
Yes,
it's true. And I'll stand by it till they drop the box in the ground. That's the deal. I'm sorry.
In the entrepreneur file, Tori Wilson is currently in the process of opening up a clothing store and a clothing line called Jaded.
Jaded.
Okay. The store is going to be located in Texas. Just a little footnote for you guys.
I wonder why Texas.
What's that?
I wonder why Texas.
I have no idea.
I don't have any idea either. Last I heard, was she not living in California, I thought?
I believe so.
You know, I don't know. But anyway.
Who knows?
And then she and her former husband lived in Florida. I think they had a home in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Billy.
Billy Kidman.
Yeah, so Texas is right in between, right? I guess. I don't know.
Maybe it is, so they can meet in the middle.
Well, Kevin Sullivan told us he was bi-coastal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he finally came out of the closet.
Yes.
To being bi-coastal.
He prefers.
No, he has a
he
home
prefers alternative
up outside in Seattle, Seattle Sound, and then he's got his gym and home in Key West. Life is tough for my friend Kevin.
Alternative coasts
and his Saintus.
Former ECW diva Shelly Martinez, aka Ariel from ECW, has gotten some attention the last few days because of a photo on her MySpace page. She has a photo up of her flipping off a Batista action figure.
Okay.
Suggesting that reports about her departure from WWE a few months ago might be more accurate than originally thought. If you remember, the story back then was that she had gotten an argument with Batista and was fired for this. Martinez made her first post-WWE appearance on July 14th for Full Contact Wrestling in Los Angeles as the manager of Vampiro. Guess what her name is, Les?
Do what?
Guess what her name as the manager of Vampiro is.
Batista.
Vampira. No.
Vampira.
Yes.
Well, boy, they thought long and hard about that.
Yes, they did. That is clever. It's not just a clever name. Macho Man Randy Savage is going...
You put over a skeleton. I mean, you just find everything exciting. Nothing jaded about you at all.
It's part of my personality. Macho Man.
Oh, my God, Les. You should see. The sun's gone. It's dark. dark outside. I'm so excited.
I can't believe
Doc,
it.
Doc, I'm happy. I'm excited for you.
Macho Man Randy Savage is going to be on the next season of The Surreal Life on VH1.
Now we're talking about something that'll probably be worth watching.
Yes, I'm going to be glued to the tube every week for this.
You thought Sean Waltman and China were entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Also on the show, actor Dabney Coleman is scheduled to appear. Poker player Phil Hellmuth, who's one of the top Texas Hold'em players in the world. Carrot Top, one of your favorite comedians, Les.
Yeah.
And okay.
Carrot Top's a lifter, you know.
Yes.
He's a gym rat. He really is.
Oh, yeah. And psychic extraordinaire Miss Cleo is going to be on the show.
Where are the hot women?
There's some, but, you know, they're kind of nameless people. You know, I was in Playboy once. I'm famous. You know, that kind of thing. But you know what gets me is I wonder if Miss Cleo, like years ago, knew that she was going to be on the next season.
She knew they were going to invent this show.
Yeah.
And she was going to be part of it.
She knew this was coming. Come on. Randy Orton was announced as the number one contender for the WWE Championship on Raw last night. He's slated to challenge Cena at SummerSlam on August 26th in New Jersey. And, of course, it's probably going to be the main event.
Now, our man, and in building up to that, our man Coach went through his paint-by-numbers promos. Hi, I am Coach, and I am tonight deciding. I thought, honestly, I thought last night, I mean, I've never been about Coach one way or the other. Sometimes, you know, he flows through things. He fits into certain, you know, niches like we all do. But I thought last night it was just the whole pitch was just so mechanical, and you know.
Maybe he was phoning in as a performance last night.
Possibly. Yes, I do have an answer, but before I tell you and the people, I must tell the contender.
It sounds like porn star acting. Yeah. Also,
sounds like a Tori Wilson interview.
Yeah. Also confirmed for SummerSlam is the return of Triple H, baby. Yes, I said baby.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. They need him back.
They
honestly do. And they need Mysterio back on the roster. You know, last night was, if you watched Raw last night, there's a lot of young guys, Kendrick and London, Murdoch and Cade, Umaga,
mm-hmm.
Haas and Benjamin, and Cena. Of course, he's been on top for a couple of years now. But there was, you know, Kennedy.
Not a lot of veterans out there.
Well, who were they?
Who were the veterans?
Yeah.
In Raw right now?
Who were the veterans that were out there last night?
Oh, not many is what I said.
Oh, I thought you said and the veterans.
I said not
where
many.
Where were they hiding? I missed them.
I said not many veterans last night.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, you're right. And you know, all this to me, with the the current injury jinx or whatever you want to call it, and plus people dying and retiring or moving on, it just gives so much more credence to the need for a solid developmental system to have people waiting in the wings. I mean, it's like this is not my original thought. You realize if you go to a Broadway play, the star will have a stand-in, right? Who's on the payroll?
Mm-hmm.
Who's there every night? In the event, and I mean, not that I don't mean have a duplicate Triple H or a duplicate Shawn Michaels or a duplicate Steve Austin or anything like that, but have someone, that is physically capable of possibly getting over that you can put out there, you know. Morelli running around with Maria doing that shtick is just shticky. It's stupid. I mean, again. Did you say to anybody, I can't wait to buy that SummerSlam pay-per-view so I can see if they actually kiss or they hold hands? Isn't that cute? Hello, Doc.
I'm thinking about that.
Okay. See, that is thought-provoking.
You put that image in my head. I know what you're saying.
But you know, it's like who cares? Mm-hmm. You know. When was the last time you think Peyton Manning's girlfriend was up in the booth Giovanni's very good and bad. I mean, what realism is there about that?
Right.
See, there again, it's hokey pokey time.
Right.
And I'm just not into that.
I got good news for you, though.
I won the lottery. I've already seen, we get at least 3 emails from the Irish lottery, the English, 16 other lotteries.
I know.
The Bangladesh lottery that we win on my, yeah, go ahead.
Thanks to third world countries, I am now a millionaire. But this next item is good news. PW Insider is confirming that all previous plans to have the Jackass crew involved at this year's SummerSlam is now off.
You're right. That is good news.
Sound the horns. Throw the confetti.
Did you hear that part of the reasoning behind that is that apparently Johnny Knoxville wanted to divert himself of WWE due to the Benoit thing, I guess.
Yes. He actually backed out.
Yeah.
And once he backed out, they scrapped all the plans.
Well, they could have invented a Steve-O, right? I mean,
the Steve-O, I think he would have done anything for weed money.
You know what? I'm glad they, you know, and I know that I was in hopes also that Kali would not be wearing a belt come Monday morning, but he is, along with Hornswoggle.
Hornswoggle,
my
yes.
favorite, the top cruiserweight of all time.
I get, well, the original plan was to have all the Jackass guys take on Umaga in a match.
Yeah, I know.
And from some of the reports going around, the Jackass guys were scheduled to win.
Yeah, okay.
So,
right, see, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
too.
We dodged a bullet on that one.
Yeah, thank God. You know, thank God.
It's also being
thank
reported.
Thank you, Johnny Knight.
Yeah.
Knoxville for not wanting to do this. We
thank you, John.
It.
Finally, he has class. It's also being reported officially by PWI that Jackie Gate is no longer contractually bound to TNA right now. She hasn't appeared on TNA TV since 2005 when she first debuted for the company,
right.
But she later became pregnant.
Very true.
Yeah.
And the father is Charlie Haas.
That's right. Jackie
Gate
is.
That's right. So now Jackie Gale is staying home being Mrs. Haas.
I don't know if you've seen this or if you know about this or not. I don't know if it's a hoax. I'm pretty sure it's not. But do you remember when Jackie Gata was on Tough Enough and everybody went to that design company that makes action figures? And they were all scanned, and everybody had an action figure made of themselves. Do you remember this?
I know a lot of people have action figures made, but I don't know where you're going with this story. No.
This action figure that was made of Jackie is now up for auction on eBay by a guy who claims he is Jackie's ex-boyfriend, the one who she actually was fighting with on the phone during the Tough Enough series.
Right. Yeah, how much do they want? I mean, how many million are they asking? I want it.
It's up to 200, I believe.
Is that right?
Last I looked, yes.
Amazing. Amazing.
But that's not all. He is auctioning off a bunch of personal items of hers, pictures, clothes,
okay.
Her underwear.
Oh, and you've got how many pair?
None.
Come on now. Come on, Doc. I know.
No. I can't.
I know who you are.
But there was a picture of Jackie nude on this in the shower with bars over her private parts. And on the bars it says, if you buy these items, I may show you what's under the bars. Ouch.
Okay.
Can you legally?
And how many of those did you order?
Can you legally do this? Like, no.
You're asking me. I guess you can.
He's not claiming that he's going to.
I mean, they
to.
Put the Paris Hilton video out, right?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I guess you can do that.
I guess you can, but I don't know. That's pretty low.
It's different, I'll say that.
Maybe the guy needed the money. I don't know.
Maybe.
WrestleView.com is reporting that it now appears the strongest candidates for TNA's Bound for Glory pay-per-view in October is either going to be Norfolk, Virginia, or Huntsville, Alabama. It seems the belief within TNA is they can draw a bigger crowd in the South as opposed to Boston and Philadelphia.
Well, they did those tent shows up in Hyannisport and places like that. That WWE used to do, and they drew less than 1,000 people at all of them, I think.
That's not good. Not good at all.
You're right.
confirmation on pay-per-view is expected to be finalized within the next couple of weeks. Should be noted that Dixie Carter really wanted Bound for Glory to be held in Chicago, but it simply did not work out that way.
Well, you know what? You were speaking of TNA. It was Jeff Jarrett and Dixie Carter supposedly were at the Fox Studios in California again this week.
Yes, I was going to get to that.
Huh?
I was actually going to get to that.
You were?
Yes.
Well, I'm
great
sorry. Excuse the ring.
Great minds think alike, lads.
Okay.
But yeah, they were back in L.A. last week for another round with Fox Network. As noted in earlier reports today, it says the feeling internally is that they're going to go forward with plans to have a two-hour edition of Impact, either on Spike TV or a Fox Network entity starting this fall. Not Fox, but a Fox entity now.
Yes, but they will. The whole point here is to be on Fox.
You want to get on Fox.
Plus other stations. Mm-hmm. Well, they were on Fox News. Fox Sports, were they not?
Fox Sports now.
And they moved away from there. Why?
I don't know.
Because they weren't getting any exposure that they could get on Spike. So
that's true.
Why would they want to move back there?
They don't. They shouldn't want to.
Well, I wouldn't think so. I mean,
I'm not going to say they don't, but they shouldn't want to.
It wouldn't make sense to, now would it?
No. But based on what's known right now, TNA and Fox have had discussion about a possible multi-tier deal where TNA-branded shows would air on multiple networks.
Right. A la the deal that WWE has with the conglomerate that has NBC and CW and USA.
Yep.
And so forth and so on, right?
Yep. Should be noted that Carter and Jarrett have been very tight-lipped about the meetings, with some of the staff not even being made aware that they were going to Los Angeles for these things.
Well, you know, and then you hear the story, too, that everybody in the company is working with a thought that they're going to end up with 2 hours in the fall, whether it's on Spike or on, because now there's talk that Spike will move their big UFC stuff to Wednesday night.
Right.
And give TNA the other hour. Now, whether they will or not, who knows, but that's the talk, anyway.
If you're going to break up the block of programming, it better be for a good reason.
Well, you know, now, somebody said TNA did their best numbers this last Thursday, which maybe they did.
1.2?
We. But they'll be, see, now that's the other thing, too. If they actually go on the Fox Network, they'll be expected to do better than that.
At least twos.
Well, I don't know what the expectation will be. Obviously, that I can't say. But yeah, there'll be. I mean, there will be expectations. You know, higher than that.
Mm-hmm. And it better be at least twos. Jeez, that's a networks are something on a completely different
level.
Well,
you know, the numbers of a few, more networks are in getting bigger and more publicly recognized. I mean, stop and think about if you have. An extensive cable hookup, you've got how many hundreds of channels, and tell me the truth, how many of them do you actually know what's on there?
Right.
Right? And where, stop and think about some of these Bravo, Oxygen, USA, A&E, Sci-Fi.
The Golf Channel.
The X, those networks have all really jumped out in the last few years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, so there's more networks that are being watched currently, so I don't think the numbers from the Monday Night Wars will ever be there again. I don't foresee that at all.
All right.
The fives and sixes. I think that's an insane man is making those kind of predictions if someone is.
Right. Let's move on really quickly.
Let's move on quickly.
We got about 10 more minutes here, and we are going to go over last week's pay-per-view prediction game. You were not in the house, if you will, Les.
Because I went again using common sense and
you were,
how silly of me.
You were under the weather, so you didn't get to play this game. But Kevin Kelly was our special co-host last week.
Right.
And he played for you.
Well, bless his heart. I trust Kevin even if we didn't win.
He subbed for you and he is really adamant about continuing your winning streak in this game.
Bless his heart.
Yeah.
See, someone cares.
first off, in a match that wasn't announced, of course, Hornswoggle won the Cruiserweight Championship. Oh, we could go for another 45 minutes about that, but we're not going to.
We could, yeah, well, yeah, I could build you a lifetime off of that particular insult, but I won't.
Right. Batista was supposed to be taking on Khali by himself. This was weird because Kevin not only pretty much knew that Khali was going to win the World Championship on SmackDown before it happened, that he knew that it was going to turn into a three-way. With Batista, Kane, and Khali. So not only did he, you know, pretty much foresee all of that, he went with Khali to go ahead and retain after that. I didn't know about the split, really.
See, he had the inside track, didn't he?
He had
that
something.
Devil.
I think he said he read it on the Observer or something, but that it was in the works or it was a rumor. But it did end up happening. I went with Khali if it was a one-on-one, and I went with Kane to beat whoever he was supposed to beat. So that's like half a point to a point there. it's kind of confusing. But MVP beat Matt Hardy for the U.S. Championship.
Yeah.
Both Kevin and I went with MVP on this one. Okay. Dusty Rhodes got squashed, basically, by Randy Orton in the Texas Bull Rope match. Which they did not use a chokehold in that match. Which I don't know if we talked about that last week, but they're banned.
Didn't use a what?
They didn't use any chokeholds.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know if we talked about this last week or not, but WWE is banning chokeholds in light of the situation that's going on right now.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And this was maybe a few days before this pay-per-view, so the pay-per-view match ended up being pretty short. Nobody used the rope as a choking weapon. And Orton pretty much just used the cowbell for the win. Kevin and I went with Orton on this one. Umaga beat Jeff Hardy. Kevin and I went with Umaga. Candice beat Melina to retain the women's championship. I went with Melina on this one.
Uh-huh.
And Kevin went with Candice, so that puts up by a point and a half. Johnny Nitro defeated CM Punk to retain the ECW World Championship.
Johnny Nitro didn't.
Or, excuse me.
John Morrison.
John Morrison.
Yes.
Kevin and I went with Johnny on this one. And Cena versus Lashley. Cena won, of course, and Kevin and I went with him. So that puts you up again, and you get credit for this win. This is
Kevin. He's all right.
This is a hand-delivered victory. From
right.
Kevin Kelly as a special present to you.
Very good. I'm tickled to death. I'm up with that, man.
Guys, we are going to take a break. We've got a lot more show to go. We're going to have J.J. Dillon. He's going to be with us when we come back from this break. I'm excited, Les. Can you tell?
No, I can't. J.J. is not a girl, so I couldn't tell how overwhelmed you were. But I'm glad you are, Doc.
I am excited. I have problem emoting tonight.
Okay.
But we're going to take a break. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher on Wrestling Weekly. We'll be right back with our main event guest right after this.
Wrestling Weekly will return to all the fun right after this.
What are you doing? You having fun?
I'm having a blast.
Wrestling-radio.com for the latest news in professional wrestling, watching of videos, and promoting your own independent wrestling organization or radio show the way that you want it done. Log on to wrestling-radio.com. Sign up today and get weekly archiving of your shows. Advertise your show on the main website. And also listen to other great wrestling radio shows such as The Squared Circle, The Minority Report, Evan's Legends, and many more. And you could be the next one. Log on today at wrestling-radio.com and begin promoting your wrestling organization or radio show the way that you want it done. We promise you, you won't be disappointed. Wrestling-radio.com, the Internet's leader in wrestling radio promotion.
What triggers the attention of a pro wrestling fan? Is it the overall ability of the superstar? Is it the angles with a mixture of drama? What drives the fans wanting to learn more about this pastime? when it reaches a boiling point and you know you're hooked on the thrill. It's no longer considered just a passion. It's an obsession.
Your favorite all-in-one online wrestling site has changed. That's right, wrestling fans. If you are obsessed with everything wrestling, check out the same site with the new name, Online World of Wrestling. As crazy as it may sound, the same content you have come to know, expect, and rely on is still there on every single page of the site under a new name. If you're looking for the most comprehensive information on the entire world of wrestling, then head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Online World of Wrestling still supplies you with all the news and information, plus galleries and bios of your favorite all-time wrestlers. Climb aboard as we head on over to onlineworldofwrestling.com. New packaging, same great flavor.
Yo, check out the new hot wrestling shop called Mad Maniacs. With a large inventory of shirts, replica belts, and action figures you can obtain and need for wrestling merchandise. Remember that we get fresh stock weekly, so don't forget to check it out. Also, with items coming in faster than Toys R Us and Walmart, you should never become disappointed. Plus half the price on WWE.com. Remember, that's www.madmaniacs.com.
Wrestling-radio.com, the internet's newest wrestling radio promotion. We offer a direct link to your wrestling radio website, a personal profile, and a control panel to maintain your own shows. And it's all free. That's right, 100% free. Wrestling-radio.com promotes some of the best online wrestling radio shows today, such as The Main Event with Chris, Woody and Will, The Irish Whip with Big Joe and JP, The Yard with Moondog, Wrestling Weekly with Doc Young and the legendary Les Thatcher, plus many more. So what are you waiting for? Sign up today and watch your show grow. For more information, log on to www.wrestling-radio.com today.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes. Today, we salute you, Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
While lesser designers would shy away from putting 300-pound men in spandex, you embrace it.
Yes, you do.
Pushing fashion to its limits, literally, you pair tights with a cape, a leotard with a mask, leather boots with a thong. All understated ways of saying, I'm going to rip your head off and look fabulous doing it. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Guy. Because without you, a man crushing another man's head in his arms would just look silly.
Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
News and information on total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip.
It's just one click away.
Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, The Best of Raven, Enigma, The Best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, The Best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNA. TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
Brooklyn, Brooklyn.
Yo, check out the new hot wrestling shop called Mad Maniacs. With a large inventory of shirts, replica belts, and action figures you can obtain and need for wrestling merchandise. Remember that we get fresh stock weekly, so don't forget to check it out. Also, with items coming in faster than Toys R Us and Walmart, you should never become disappointed. Plus half the price on WWE.com. Remember, that's www.madmaniacs.com.
Madmaniacs.com.
Doc Young, Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. On the line right now from, well, he's had a long storied career, but a lot of people remember him best from WCW. J.J. Dillon is on the program. J.J., I want to thank you for being on the show tonight.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. You have a long storied career.
Well, if anybody should know about it, it should be you, because pretty much
I know the story. I help write the damn thing.
Yeah.
You know, we might as well, you're talking about that. I get a chance to hang out a little bit August 10th and 11th and 12th in Charlotte. And I was saying to the doc earlier in the show that it's really a big week. I mean, the lineup is, man, is fantastic.
Yeah, it sure is. And, you know, Charlotte will always be a special place for me, and I know for you too, Les. You know, it's where I started my career full-time, and I have such great memories. And then kind of went full circle, you know, back there in the mid-'80s for the, you know, the run of the Four Horsemen, and the Carolinas, the Mid-Atlantic area was always kind of where our, you know, our base was, and it all springboarded from there. So it's great to come back there, and Greg Price has put together a couple of these fan fests, and I've enjoyed every one of them. I get to see, I'm as excited as some of the fans to see some guys that I wouldn't otherwise see, except for
right.
coming together in that weekend. And, you know, I don't get to see you less as often as I'd like, and for us to have a chance to sit down and relive some of the old memories and intermingle with the fans. I get as much out of the weekend, believe me, as the fans do.
Yeah, you know, it's surprising me sometimes, Jim, that some of these people, their memories are so, or I guess really surprised that you have, you know, we went out and did a job every night, not literally, Doc, we actually got our hands raised once in a while, but we went out and did our job every night, five, six nights, seven nights a week sometimes, and you didn't think about what you really left the people with, and then somebody will say, I remember 35 years ago, you did this or that, and you think, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's amazing to me that you've actually touched people, you know, that deeply with something.
Yeah, and in that era, also, we were somewhat insulated from the fans. We didn't have that much one-on-one interaction. Autograph sessions and that kind of thing really weren't a big thing in the wrestling business in those days. And so a lot of fans that were really loyal to us and supported us so well over the years. A lot of them, you know, we never got a chance to meet. And so it's kind of nice after all these years to come back. And I've had many of the fans tell me that, you know, they circle the date in their calendar and they know that many of them are getting to meet you for the first time and take pictures. And I've had a lot of them come up with their children who, in some cases, weren't even born yet at the time that we were there, and you know they're excited to tell their kids that, you know, these were my heroes when I was growing up.
Yeah, first year that this thing ran, sitting in the autograph line, I had a kid come up and well, he wasn't a kid then. This guy had to be 30 something, but he said, "You signed the sole of my baby shoe when I was one, and my mother still got it." But I mean, that's to me, that's amazing. I mean, it's just, you know.
It seems to me like this fan fest coming up is going to be really huge, and I think that they should do this idea of the Jim Cornette roast and the slumber party at this one. You remember this, Les?
Yeah,
they should do it at this.
That
one.
Was the Ward family was going to do that. Yeah, in fact, I was going to host the Cornette.
They
roast.
Should really do that. Too.
I'm sorry we're not doing that too, because I was all set to zinger Jim a few times.
But see, they're doing a lot of things. These shows have grown. You know, the roast. The first time they ever did one of these, they didn't have live matches, and
right.
That's been a nice addition. And the Q&A sessions have become even more popular than they were the first couple times around, because it's the chance for for fans to have an open forum and to ask questions. Sometimes they go through the autograph line, and everybody's trying to get their thing signed, and you know they can't pause and get into in-depth questions on a lot of things that they're curious about. So the Q&A sessions, you know, all the stuff's been signed, and it's just to sit there and ask questions.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah. You know, the thing about Charlotte too, Doc, that made it special for the fans, I think, especially from the era that Jim and I, you know, were there, spent there, is that that was home base. So if there were 55 guys on the Crockett roster, we all, for the most part, I mean, there was the odd guy, Luther Lindsay, had his farm up around Greensboro and so forth, but for the most part, all those guys lived in Charlotte. So if you're a wrestling fan, it's a chance you're standing at a checkout line at the grocery store behind J.J. Dillon or Johnny Weaver or whoever, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, the first year we did this thing, my wife and daughter and the granddaughter and I went to a restaurant, and my wife was being funny, but she said, you know, it's that guy from the sheriff's department, he keeps staring at you, and she said, he's going to arrest you or something. And I said, yeah, okay, well, I haven't done anything. But anyway, on our way out, he stopped me. He said, aren't you Les Thatcher? And I certainly don't look the way I looked in 1974 or 5 or whatever. And I said, yeah, she started talking about wrestling, and I just thought that was amazing, you know. But that's part of it, too, I think, Doc, is Charlotte was a hub for wrestling. And, you know, it was you saw the guys at clubs, you know, at the gym, in the grocery store.
Yeah. JJ.
Yes.
We were talking earlier about news about Court Bauer leaving SmackDown as creative member. You, at one time, were a creative member at WWE. But you also know Court. Can you tell us a little bit about your time with Court Bauer?
You know, I didn't really get to know him all that well. He contacted me, and I came in. They'd already run a couple shows, so I actually only came in for one go-around. But it was at a time when, you know, the business so desperately needed a second major competitor, and I know that it's tough to find people that have a passion, have the financial resources and what have you to make a go at it. And I thought that the Court probably had a good shot at it, and I just I wanted to help him if I could. And I didn't really get to know him all that well, other than he certainly treated me with the utmost professionalism and respect, and I was saddened that they weren't able to continue. And then I heard that he did go to work for the WWE in the creative department, and he's been there quite a while. So obviously he had something to contribute and something of value. And I have no idea what the story is with him leaving. You know, that's part of life in the wrestling business. Guys come and guys go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, they said, Jim, that he was butting heads with Michael Hayes, but then it's not like people sitting down trying to come up with a finish or a storyline or something that they would butt heads. It's like that comes with the territory, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, you go into a locker room and there's never total agreement on anything.
Right.
I don't care what the subject is, if it's the matches that evening or critiquing a match. There's never total agreement, and I think that's one thing that makes wrestling the great business it is, because it's nothing is ever black and white. It's always shades of gray, and it's not a matter of who's right and who's wrong.
Let me ask you. We touched on this just before we came back on the air, but this whole Benoit situation obviously is tragic. I mean, that goes without saying. But I was saying to Doc earlier in the show that people are trying to find a culprit, you know, whether it's Vince or WWE or the fans or the doctors or whoever. And my thought is there's no clear cut. You know, you can't point at one thing and say, okay, change this and everything will be all right. I think it's a combination of things, and I think it starts with the athletes at this level, whether it's wrestling or basketball or football or baseball, are, first of all, large egos and competitive spirits, and at some point they're going to do what's necessary to put them on top. Am I right?
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I don't think that business has ever really changed in that respect. You know, when I first broke into business, I heard Diana Ball was it, you know, and there were guys supposedly that took it to, you know, to give them a competitive edge, and this is 30-some years ago. Les Luger made a statement, something about the business has always been something where, you know, fans and people in the business were attracted to freaks. And, you know, probably to a degree, that's true. I mean, I remember as a fan, Haystacks Calhoun, 600-plus pounds. He was unusual. He was different than the guy walking down the street.
Yeah.
I remember Dick the Bruiser. You know, he just was a big, awesome, powerful individual, different than the guy walking down the street. Paul Anderson, world's strongest man. And then you had guys that didn't have the real unusual physiques that had, you know, great athletic ability in the ring. You know, Argentina Rocca wrestled with bare feet and could do unbelievable things. You always had all kinds of things. I think the business evolved where there seemed to be a focus as the territories died and as the WWE became it in the business for quite a while, there was a certain look that they seemed to focus a lot of their attention on in terms of who got TV time and who was you know, who was being pushed. And I thought at the time that there was a certain similarity to all of them. And I heard a story from someone who allegedly was leaving the back of the arena right before the matches were over with Vince McMahon. And I guess earlier in the day they had been watching some guys in the ring, and Vince thought one of the guys was someone else. And that doesn't seem like it's any big deal, except that tells me that from a long distance there's a certain sameness to the look of all of them.
Right.
And they lost some of their individuality. And what happens is a young guy coming into the business, he looks at the across the locker room and sees, you know, who's high up on the card, who's getting the exposure in terms of interview time or involved in feature matches, and there's some guys that are motivated to do what they have to do to try and look like the guy who's getting the push. And it is a personal decision. And like Les, you said it, you know, everybody wants to look for a scapegoat, somebody they can put their finger on and say, this is the reason for the whole thing. And I don't think we're ever going to get to that. We'll probably never know, even after all the toxicology reports are in, after everything is said and done. There will be no one that can give you a definitive decision as to exactly what happened.
Right.
It's a sad tragedy any way you look at it.
Moving on to a different topic, a lot of people don't know this, but before you took the commissioner role in WCW, you were with WWE for a long time as one of the top storyline writers. What were some of the storylines that you'd come up with in this time
on? I went to work for what was then the World Wrestling Federation, which was Titan Sports before they went public, and that was in the early part of 1989. And at that time, they only had two syndicated shows, which was Superstars and Challenge, and they had three different groups touring on every given night. So that was three full cards that funneled together for the two nights of TV, and you only had five major pay-per-views at that time. But it still was a challenge to coordinate all that. And at the time that I came there, Vince McMahon and Pat Patterson really were a two-man team that had been doing it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was invited to join that team because they were spread so thin. And I welcomed the opportunity because it was a time in my life where I knew that you know, I couldn't be what I was doing forever. Father Time catches up with all of us. And I felt like I'd gone full circle because I actually started as a referee with Vince's father, and now here in the early, late 80s, early 90s, this was 2 years after Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant had that huge house in the Pontiac Silverdome, and
right.
I was being recruited to come work for Vince Jr. So it was like a dream come true for me, and I learned a lot when I was there. I learned I'd been a student in the business from the masters of the business, people like Eddie Graham. And, I worked in Dallas and learned a lot from people like Fritz Von Erich, and I worked for Paul Bosch in Houston. I worked for Sam Muchnick in St. Louis. And, coming
you've learned from Jim Crockett Sr. and Barnett, too, right?
Yeah, Jim Barnett, absolutely. and Jim Crockett Sr. And so coming to New York all of a sudden was kind of like going to graduate school for me and learning more than I ever had before about the nuances of television production. And it was a great experience for me. I learned a lot.
If WWF had such a hectic TV and traveling schedule as they had now, would you still take that job?
Well, I would today, as Les can tell you. With Father Time, it gets to the point that the wrestling business is such a demanding business, whether you're strictly a wrestler, and I don't mean to downplay when I say strictly a wrestler, but someone who really has to just only worry about managing their own career in terms of their schedule, their workout regimen, getting their proper diet, getting the proper rest, all those things. You're like an entity unto yourself. But when you get into the talent management side of it or the creative side of it, now instead of worrying about just one guy, you're worried about 12, 16 guys on a card one night. And if you're in the front office, like I say, with three groups touring, that's 50, 60, 70 wrestlers that all of a sudden you're having to deal with. So it becomes a 24/7 thing. And that requires a lot of energy.
You never
get away from it. You eat and sleep wrestling, and I had no problem doing that because it had been my life's work and I loved it. But at this stage of my life, if that challenge was placed in front of me again and they said, "Do you want to go for it?" I don't know that physically or mentally that I could do it. And I wouldn't want to do it if I didn't have the time, the energy, and the desire to approach it in that way.
Right. I have another question. Like, you're doing, of course, a lesser schedule now. You're pretty much retired. But you made some appearances last year for Ring of Honor?
Yeah, I made one appearance, actually, for Ring of Honor. And there was a group down in Virginia around the Norfolk area that I made several appearances for, and it was good for me to get out and kind of go back to my roots, to see what it was like to go into the small arenas. And right now the business has evolved that most of the matches now take place in with major promotions in these huge arenas. And as Les will tell you, back in our day, we were in Park Center in Charlotte, not in a huge coliseum. And we were doing a lot of weekly shows, and in the summertime we were playing outdoor ballparks, and we were going out to the people. And it wasn't only in the Carolinas, in Florida. I mean, we play National Guard armories and high schools, and wrestling came to the people. And wrestling business has gotten away from that. And I think that's unfortunate because there's a lot of people out there that are diehard wrestling fans that used to look forward. Maybe it wasn't on a regular basis once a month, but they would know that a couple times a year that you'd come to an arena near them where they could come out and see you live.
Let's get the Ring of Honor for you, Jim. I told Doc, I said, I bet Jim thinks it's kind of a throwback to old school. I mean, the way Sapolsky books his top cards and the way they work, it's a more modern version of the same thing we did.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. And I was there with Jim Cornette on that night, and I have the utmost respect for Jim, both professionally and as a human being. And he's the one that initiated the first call to have me come do the date. And we ended up doing a sit down interview tied to that weekend that I thoroughly enjoyed. But just sitting in the dressing room that night, and I had no you know, no agenda other than to be there for that night and to kind of absorb what was going on. And many times during the evening, I would have individual talent either come up to me or come up to Jim Cornette, or sometimes they would grab both of us and want to go off to a corner somewhere and just pick our brains and get our feelings about a variety of topics. And it kind of renewed my faith in some of the current wrestling talent. It's easy to think that they've got rock star mentality and they don't have the passion for the business that Les, you and I had when
yeah.
we were young. But there's still some of it out there that have a pride in what they're doing. And unfortunately, a lot of them are caught up in a business where the business itself has changed. So
yeah.
they may have old school values, but it's hard to preserve those old school values in today's environment.
Very well put, James. You're right. You're absolutely right.
I want to get to some questions from the chat room. A chatter by the name of Resthold asks you, JJ, what do you think was the best all-time horseman lineup?
I've always said that, of course, the originals will always be very special, with Flair and Tully and Ole and Arn. Ole wasn't there that long because, you know, we had an opportunity to get Luger, who didn't have a wealth of experience, but he was certainly a guy that had the size and needed the grooming. And with us, we could camouflage his lack of experience in the beginning, and at the same time, it served two purposes, because Ole's going to draw you money whether he's a horseman or whether he's, you know, on the other side of the fence. His style never changed, his promos never changed, and he drew money no matter where he was. So, but Ole will always be very special to me. Going back to when Les and I first started in the Carolinas, Ole had been there right before I came in, and then came back while I was there, and I always got along with Ole. He was he told you how it was, and he didn't sugarcoat it, but he's somebody who I learned a lot from as well. But
you know, I've always said the original horseman too, Jim, because I always thought every one of you could promo, every one of you could work, so that, I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't you could close your eyes and, okay, give me this guy and this guy for a tag match, and even, you know, throwing yourself in there as a manager, if you had to lace boots up, you guys go out there and deliver.
Yeah, we did what we had to. And I think after Luger and Barry Windham came in terms of being able to accomplish the most in the time that we were in the ring from bell to bell, probably the addition of Barry Windham was a pretty special time, too.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the all-time greats in the business. Would have been a great world champion. He had the size, the look, and certainly the ability.
Restall has a follow-up question. It says, do you agree that with Ole Anderson that heel should be hated and feared and not charismatic and comical like Flair?
I don't think that there is a rubber stamp formula that you know that you have to be. I think it has to do with the individual and the personality. Certainly Flair is a different style today than when he first broke into the business. If you see early pictures of Flair, he was a monster. He was a power lifter.
Yeah.
And after that plane crash where he broke his back, there was no way that he could possibly carry all that weight anymore. And you know, he worked probably around the 240 range, and he drew a lot of money no matter where he was. But some guys, it's their personality. It's style, their persona, their type of interview, and I think you could be an effective heel without being labeled. But guys like the Sheik, I think he was one of the great legends of all time. And I remember as a kid, he was a guy that you feared. You looked at him, and even though he wasn't a huge man in terms of his physical presence, just something about the look in his eyes, and he was someone that you feared. I felt that way about Skull Murphy when I was a kid. And some guys are heels that, and especially if they're a heel for a long time, after a while, sometimes you want to like.
that's how Bruiser. Well, that's how a lot of heels ended up being baby faces. I mean, yes. You know, exactly. You know, what you're saying about the Sheik, yeah, I concur. Doc, if you ever saw Zib, if you ever saw Sheik, after getting some juice, come out of the ring and start to the dressing room, you would see, I mean, no matter how bad those people hated him, how bad they wanted to knife him or hit him with a chair, they parted like the Red Sea because they were in fear of it. I mean, there was no doubt about it.
Yeah. DeCapo says, was Magnum TA going to get a title run or just a program with Flair before his career-ending car wreck?
Oh, I don't think anything was etched in stone at that point, but I think you would find general agreement that whether it was consciously or not, I think he was being groomed eventually to be a candidate for a world championship. You know, again, he had everything. He had the size, he had the looks, he had the athletic ability, he had the work ethic, and those guys just don't, you know, come along every day. And I think that was definitely on the horizon for him, even though maybe there wasn't a timetable or a date circled on the calendar that it was going to happen in such and such a time. He was definitely headed down that path.
Yeah. Another question from the chat room. It says, talk about the luxuries that you and the rest of the Horsemen had. And if Jim Crockett spared no expense for his top guys?
You know, I don't know. I guess you could make an argument for luxuries, but I just I felt that we were treated very well. We had a brutal schedule. We were you know, we were touring around the country. We were doing syndicated television for the Mid-Atlantic Network, and we were also doing separate programming for TBS. Mm-hmm. We were doing often double shots on a Saturday, double shots on a Sunday. And, you know, while business is good, it's human nature, whether as a promoter or as a talent, to want to capitalize on that momentum. So you end up pushing yourself, and I think Jimmy was smart enough to try and show his appreciation by making things a little easier for you whenever he could. And if that's spoiling you, then I guess he was spoiling us, but I think that was a good business decision.
TNA Rule says, did you personally pick Oliver Humperdinck to take over all your roles when you left Florida?
No, I wasn't... that wasn't my decision, but I have known Oliver Humperdinck for a long, long time. And again, he's another guy who I have great respect for. He's a fun guy to be around and been very successful in the business. And a lot of times things happen in this business that guys are just happen to be the right place at the right time, and that was probably the case with him.
Hikaru says, what does TNA need to do to be able to get onto a competitive level with WWE?
I don't know that I could give you a simple answer to that. From my perspective, you know, there's just been a series of things right from the beginning. I personally don't like the six-sided ring because I know, I understand maybe why it was done so that when you turn on the TV and see that ring, it's unique to them, mm-hmm. which I guess could be a positive, but it also brings with it limitations of things that you could do in a traditional match that are very difficult to do in a six-sided ring. I think in the beginning, and they've had periods of time where they go back to this more strongly than they do at other times, where people look at the WWF/WWE and say this is the model for success, and so even if it's unconsciously they end up trying to emulate them, and you're never going to be better than they are at what they do, and a lot of people just in the business just don't understand that, and I the hair stands up in the back of my neck that every time someone who has had some level of success with the WWE leaves and goes to TNA or goes somewhere else, it seems like that first or second interview, it seems like they have to use that time to why they're still not at the WWE, rather than ignoring the fact that they were ever there and concentrating on what they're doing today. Because every time you do that, you just draw attention to the fact that you're not there, and you come across as second rate or somewhat below them. And they've done much too much of that. And in time, what happens is, I've always said too, that you have one chance at a first impression. And if that first impression doesn't have impact, it's tough over a period of time to lose that whatever that image is conjured up with that with the first time that they saw you. So
right.
TNA's had a lot of things working against them right from the get go. And at this point, I don't know really what you could do to dramatically turn around where they are.
Right. JJ, do you have an official website, right?
Yes.
What's the address on that?
Yeah, it's www.jjdillon.com. D-I-L-L-O-N, jjdillon.com.
Excellent.
And it's been up for about 3-4 years, and at the top of the main page, you'll see my autobiography, Wrestlers Are Like Seagulls, and you can click on it, which takes you to Crowbar Press, which is my co-author, Scott Teal, is also the publisher, and he's the guy that co-wrote Ole's book that preceded Seagulls, and he's also done
Joe Hamilton,
the assassin Jody Hamilton, yes, and also Ivan Koloff, and I understand that he's also working on Tony Atlas. So Scott Teal is a very gifted author and a very respected historian, and you can go there and see Seagulls and see a synopsis of the book and all the chapter headings.
It's worth reading. I've read it, and it's really good.
Excellent. Check it out, guys. Wrestlers Are Like Seagulls by J.J. Dillon and Scott Teal.
You can either go to Crowbar Press or go to jjdillon.com. And recently we added under the photo section, it's called J.J. Pam Cam. Pam is my daughter, and we've taken a lot of candid shots at either Cauliflower Alley or the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame functions and some, you know, relatively current shots of me with many of the legends of the business.
Sounds cool. Check it out, guys, for more on J.J. Dillon. J.J., I want to thank you for being with us tonight.
I've enjoyed it, guys. The time always seems to fly by, unless I look forward to a
couple weeks. We'll
couple get weeks in Charlotte and have a chance to unwind and spend an enjoyable weekend, and I invite anybody that's in earshot or driving distance of Charlotte to come on down. It really will be a weekend you'll never forget.
Yeah. Looking forward to it, my friend. Look forward to seeing you. Thanks a lot for being with us.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Take care, Jimmy.
J.J. Dillon, guys, manager of the Four Horsemen here on Wrestling Weekly. That's going to wrap things up for this week. Unless we've got the assassin, Jody Hamilton. He's going to be with us next week.
Right, exactly.
Back, I guess, if you will.
Yeah, and we'll have the real one this time. Not
not some guy
drunk
named,
we woke up from his nap.
Some guy named John. But that was... That's going
the highlight
to be,
of our year, I know.
That's going to be on the anniversary show, I think.
Well, I can't see why you don't win some kind of commentator announcer of the year award for that. I really don't. Or engineer of the producer of the year.
Yeah. I want to thank JJ for being on the show with us. ECW is coming on next. If you're listening live and you're on the East Coast of the United States, we'll be back with you next Tuesday from 8 to 10 with The Assassin. So, guys, we'll see you next week.